This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil? The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual, with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. We're live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great, great.
I noticed you got Toronto Maple Leafs on this morning. Buffalo Bills, but you're missing something.
Alabama's underneath.
Alabama's underneath, but you're missing the Toronto Wolfpack, Naz.
Yeah, the Toronto Wolfpack.
I just want to announce to all our
hat like that. Yeah.
We have to promo Toronto's. It's the only team right now sporting a championship belt, as far as I can tell, Naz.
Wolfpack. They're going into tier 2 of rugby.
Toronto, interesting story. We won't dwell on it, but we do want to. We'll come back to this story at one point. The Toronto Wolfpack, sort of underneath the radar screen, but they won the English, what is it here? The Kingstone Press League One title. It's a rugby title. Yesterday, they beat the Barrow Raiders 26-2, I believe, and they had a fantastic season. They ran 18-1-1. They operate out of Lamport Stadium, and I look out the window here, Naz, and it's
right across the street
from us. So they've been promoted to the second division in the English Rugby League. And in fact, the interesting part about this story is the Toronto Wolfpack, they are North America's first transatlantic team. They actually play here and they play in England or over in Great Britain. And they pay for the teams to come here and they won the title. So congrats to the Toronto Wolfpack.
Congratulations.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. And at some point in time, we'll follow up with that story. I'd love to interview the owner and tell us the entire Toronto Wolfpack story. Apparently, they have a really loyal following. 8,000 people yesterday at Lamport Stadium. It's a huge rugby fandom base in southern Ontario. So, Toronto Wolfpack, congrats for bringing honor to Toronto. Thank you so much. Anyways, we got to get ourselves some Wolfpack paraphernalia, Naz.
Absolutely.
Get ready for next season. Anyways, two very interesting guests coming up this morning. Give the listeners a little roadmap of the show. Shortly after our first break, we'll be talking to Lance Hornby. Lance, of course, writes for the Toronto Sun and the Post Media Network. He's been following the Toronto Maple Leafs rookie tournament and interesting articles on Nazem Kadri, and has been following the Leafs. And hockey's starting to heat up. Naz, I know you've been counting the days till hockey starts, so we're gonna pick up that discussion. And at the end of the hour, Canada's premier voice on baseball in the last generation, Bob Elliott. And I know, Naz, you've been chatting with Bob, and he's going to bring us up to date on all things baseball. And there's nobody who knows baseball in this market or in this country
better
than Bob Elliott.
So
we're certainly thrilled about that. But getting into it, Naz, we've had some discussions all week about a significant event this week that sort of brings a lot of memories home for the two of us. Of course, we're talking about the 25th anniversary celebrations on the Fan 590. And that, of course, the Fan 590 debuted on the air. It wasn't 590 in those days, but it was, I believe it was 1430. 1430, the old CKFH, which we all grew up and listened to. But they celebrated the 25th anniversary of all sports radio in Canada. They were the trailblazers in Canada when it came to all sports radio. And they had cause to celebrate that event this week, 25 years. And on behalf of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, I know I speak for you, Naz, and I'll give you an opportunity. Congrats to everyone at the Fan 590. It's been an interesting ride. Naz, you and I have been passionate sports junkies longer than we can remember. And, you know, we've been loyal listeners of the Fan 590 or whatever, you know, it's of all sports radio at 1430 as well. And certainly we've listened in for 25 years. And I think on behalf of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, and Naz, I'll give you the opportunity, congratulations.
Yeah, for sure. They have done a really good job. They came in 92 on All Sports Radio, and the Jays and the Leafs Jays won the World Series that year, and the Leafs were in the semifinals of the Stanley Cup. So they gathered a market pretty quickly and then almost lost it when they were both on strike, Major League Baseball and the NHL, and they had a tough time. But they've done a good job. But, you know, I go back to the guy that really should get credit as far as I'm concerned. Talk sports radio, to me, was Dick Beddoes and Hockey Hotline. That's what I listened
to. Oh, you're going back a long way, Naz.
Yeah. Dick Beddoes. And I used to be – I was a sports junkie myself, and I used to listen to every sports cast right along the radio dial. I used to go up and down the radio dial to hear Jim Hunt, Bill Stevenson, Pat Marsden, all these guys. And it was, you couldn't get enough of it. Now you got, there's lots of it, but you couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah,
that was us back then.
Well, it's not. It wasn't just us back then. It's us today, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. We're back at it. Yeah.
We haven't changed all that much. Naz, just gotten a little bit older, a little bit grayer, and lost a few and gained a few in other places, but. Yeah, certainly it's what brings us down here every Sunday morning is that passion for sports. And the back in the early 90s, that was what was happening down in the States. Of course, there had been a few radio stations down there that had converted to the all sports format. It was, you know, it's one of those, you know, evolutions in broadcasting. They recognize that there is and there always will be a significant market for passionate sports fans who can't get enough. And, you know, they entered that. They took a to try and do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and make a business out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it had its challenges along the way.
A lot of people thought it was going to fail. I mean, it almost did, but it carried through.
The reports have it that it almost failed because they got off to in one sense, they were fortunate. They got into the Toronto market just when the Blue Jays – I mean, they literally went on the air September – can't remember the exact date, 5th, 6th, 7th of 1992. Of course, that's the year the Jays won their first World Series title, so that we were in the – throes of a significant, I don't remember if there was a pennant race that year, if the Blue Jays were so far ahead they didn't have to worry about, you know, making the playoffs. But, you know, you go on the air and, you know, the first World Series win, as they said, north of the border in that famous call when they beat the Braves. And then the Leafs were going through a rejuvenation with the in the Doug Gilmore years.
Yeah, that was the Gretzky year of the high stakes.
And Pat Burns. So they got in, I guess, fortuitously just at the right time when sports was in the local market here at the top of everybody's agenda. And, of course, that gave them the opportunity, I presume, to attract more than just the hardcore sports junkies. Because when you get a Toronto team that's competing for a title – then it excites the whole city because, you know, quite frankly, in Toronto, it's not like when we talked to Eddie Andelman in Boston, and you got every single team down there that wins titles all the time. You know, we don't get them that often in Toronto. So when you get them, or when you have success, then the entire community gets engaged. And I think that's sort of what happened with the Fan 590, and I'll call it the Fan 590 for lack of a better term because they didn't come on the dial at 590.
But it was CKY that used to be on the dial at 590.
Remember the old CKY?
Jim Hunt was the sports director.
Shaky. Yeah. And you bring back fond memories of Shaky. And talking about some of those personalities over the years that that made it so so much fun. You know, I mean, when you talk about sports radio, I mean, people who aren't into sports really don't. I don't know if they don't get it. I mean, passionate sports guys like you and I, you know, it's just it's part of our, you know, I don't, I, it's part of our DNA almost. I mean, I can't remember a moment in my life when I didn't want to watch sports. I mean, I remember the very first Stanley Cup final game on TV that I watched. I still remember the Grey Cup in 1963 when Angelo Mosca took out Willie Fleming, and I remember talking to one of the great privileges of this show, Naz, is we actually got to talk to Angelo Mosca about that.
A couple of times.
A couple of times. And, I mean, there's so many great sports moments. And, you know, when I read this week that it's been 25 years for Fan 590 and it's been 25 years since the Blue Jays won the World Series and 25 years since those great Toronto Maple Leaf runs, I say to myself, what happened?
You got to get the guy.
It seems like yesterday.
The guy that should be given credit for the 25 years is definitely Bob McCown. Bob McCown is the best. Nobody close. There's Bob McCown and everybody else.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
No question about that. And there've been some significant talent that's gone through that station. And you know, we talked. You bring up Bob McCown, and you know, I certainly want to give my thoughts on Bob. One of the great shows that I listened to quite often was when Marsden was there, and he did the show with various people over time. Of course, Don Landry did it with Landry. I don't remember if he did it with Shaky Hunt for a while. I know McCown did
it. McCown and Shaky were together.
Did it for a while. Marsden was a character. He certainly was. And what's great about guys like McCown and Marsden is that they are characters. And I think they understood, when I use the past tense for Pat Marsden, with Bob McCown, I think he understands that they're in the entertainment business. And they're not just there to go up there and tell you an arcane fact or tell you what somebody's batting average is, or, you know, they understand that in the entertainment business, you've got to cultivate yourself and you've got to show some personality and you've got to be controversial. You've got to give people a reason to listen. Aside from McCown, I mean, Marsden was a character in a completely different way than McCown. I mean, I guess the best way of describing Pat Marsden was that they used the word, if there was a couple of words in the English dictionary, bon vivant. I mean, he lived on the edge, from what I understand, and it came through on the show. And it's always –
You love listening to it.
Oh, I love listening to Marsden. Yeah. And, you know, he had some go-tos with Don Landry and and then Landry, unfortunately, God rest, Pat, rest in peace, please. Pat unfortunately passed away. And then Landry went on and did a great show with Gord Stellick. Stellick and Landry in the morning. Some great stuff. But let's talk about some of the other guys who've gone through. Dan Shulman, one of the preeminent broadcasters in sports today, baseball and NCAA basketball. Elliot Friedman. George Strombolopoulos. I mean, there's the list of talent that's gone through that particular station and moved on. Remarkable. Remarkably talented
Dan
people.
Is back,
yeah, Dan and Dan Shulman's back. Yeah. But let's talk about. I want to talk about the guy that has been there since day one, still there. Absolutely no question, although he's controversial and some people don't like him. I'm not saying that from a personal point of view. Some people don't like what he does on the air. My personal opinion, he has been the greatest sports talk radio personality in Canada, probably in history. I say that unabashedly. It's, of course, I'm talking to the Bobcat, talking about the Bobcat, Bob McCown. He is a character on the air. And I think, and I listened to his interview this week. The guys in the morning on the Fan 590, unfortunately, I got to be honest with you, I think it's, is it Elliot?
Greg Brady.
You know what? My apologies. Elliot Price. My memory isn't what it used to be. They interviewed Bob McCown this week about his 25 years. And Bob, I think, aside from being highly intelligent, he understands that radio is entertainment and that he's in the entertainment business. And if you have to make a living from this business, which fortunately you and I don't have to make a living from this business, Naz, thankfully, if you have to make a living from this business, you have to stick out from the crowd. And you have to develop a character. And I think Bob understands that. And there's no question that he's a character. The strength of Bob's show, aside from his, I can use the word irascibility. He's not scared to ask pointed questions. He's not scared to have strong opinions. He's not scared to be negative about or be critical. It's probably a better way of putting it. Sometimes he's right and sometimes he's wrong. And sometimes you get more listeners from when you're wrong than when you're right, because people want to listen in and they want to correct you or whatever else they want to do. But I've always thought the strength of Bob's show, aside from Bob himself, was the quality of the discussion in certain areas. It's certainly the intelligence of some of the discussions he's had with some of the guests that he's had, I find highly appealing. I love Bob Ryan, Boston Globe. The gentleman from Sports Illustrated, Richard Deitch. The lawyer from New York, Rich Becker. And he keeps bringing them back and back. When we were younger, Naz, you know, stats and figures were more important perhaps than they are now. Stats are still important. But now, you know, if I listen to two intelligent people having an intelligent conversation about a sports topic, I find that highly appealing. And I don't think there's any better place on radio than you will find it than on primetime sports and on Bob McCown Show.
And the reason why we brought this up, because we are in sports talk radio too. Like, our hour is sports talk radio, and it's I love listening to that show. He's done a terrific job in his career, and he knew where to go with it.
Yeah, and
it's funny, they were talking about ratings. They had, when they were down, they were at a 2.1 rating after during the NHL strike and the MLB strike. There's a lot of radio stations that don't even get 2.1 right now.
Oh, the ratings are phenomenal. I remember once chatting with Bob McCown one time, brief chat, and I said, Bob, I love your show. I listen to it. I listen to it every afternoon in the car when I'm driving home. And he looked at me and he said, buddy, you got to get a life. and that was just Bob. Yeah, I get it. I'm sure if he doesn't appreciate it, I'm sure his advertisers appreciate the fact that I'm listening in. But most of us, you know, we're driving in the car. I don't listen to all 3 hours, you know, from the office home, half an hour or 45 minutes, and listen to it, catch up. And it's been part of my daily routine for longer than I can remember. Anyways, well, maybe we'll pick up this conversation, but we do have to go to break, and we'll be back after the break with Lance Hornby.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville brought back the large five-topping pizza special for just $13.99 for a limited time. I'm whispering because the last time Pizzaville brought back this special, there was pandemonium in the streets, pushing, shoving, biting. So order now and order often, and hopefully you won't have any bite marks when this is over. Call Pizzaville for the large five-topping pizza special at £3636 from your cell phone. Shh.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning, welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. And if you're listening in downtown Toronto, we're also on 96.7 FM. We're trying to connect with Lance Hornby. We'll keep trying to do that, try to get Bob Elliott on the phone. Naz, just before we go to break, we were talking about the 25 years of anniversary of sport of the 24-hour format sports talk radio in Toronto. And, of course, now that's incarnated as the Fan 590. In the early days, it was 1430, which is the old CKFH, which a lot of us grew up on, and hard to believe it's been 25 years.
I think back then Foster Hewitt had inclination that this was going to happen, though, with sports radio. Maybe not to the extent that it has, but he had an insight on it, believe it or not. Well, Foster was the one who brought Dick Beddoes into the fold.
Let's talk a little bit about Dick Beddoes, and we were talking about him earlier, Naz, and you had reminded me how influential that he I'd sort of forgotten quite a bit about the influence he had back in the 70s and some of the things that he did. And you know, he was the old show, Hockey Hotline?
Hockey Hotline.
Your memories of that one, Naz?
I used to listen to it all the time.
What was Hockey Hotline was on after Leaf broadcast?
No, it was
CKFA?
It was on before.
Okay,
and it had a time slot.
Yeah, that was certainly, and we'll get back to that conversation. We're pleased to tell our listeners that we do have on the line Bob Elliott. Bob, of course, requires very little introduction, so I won't do it. He's a member of too many Hall of Fames. That I want to report it here, but I just will remind listeners that he has been the preeminent Canadian baseball voice of of our generation. Good morning, Bob. How are you? Bob? Oh, did we lose him?
Hello?
Bob?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good morning, Bob. How are you this morning?
How are you now?
Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Just reminding our listeners that you have been the most important or one of the most important voices in baseball for a generation. We're so pleased to have you again on our show. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Bob, the Jays have not had the year that I don't know whether we would have expected or whether we would have liked. Your assessment of the Jays season, what went wrong and what perhaps changes you envision for next year?
Well, I think the what went wrong part is easier.
Okay.
I think what went wrong is, you know, they've had too many injuries. You know, this too many guys working out over 30 years of age, working out twice a day, January and February, and when they were in Dunedin. They've had the shortstop and the second and the third baseman. They lost both of those guys for mega amounts of time. They just really haven't been able to put the team they envisioned. You know, they put up on the blackboard in the winter and during the meetings. They haven't been able to put it on the field often enough. You know.
Bob, the team looks too slow and too old. How do you correct that? And now, having said that, there's two prospects in play, Bichette and Guerrero. Where do they stand in this whole rebuild?
Well, they play big roles, but they're that's too much, I think, to ask. You see guys with other teams making the jump from Class A to the big leagues. But they're usually pitchers, you know. It's very difficult for a position player to make that jump. Like both these guys were at Dunedin this year, and I think they'll start off at Double A next year at New Hampshire. And you know, I would still think they're a year away. You don't want to rush a player and ruin them. But I think that's certainly the way to go. You know, I was. The way to go is the way the Yankees did with strength up the middle, like Posada and Jeter and Bernie Williams. They were all homegrown guys, and you added homegrown guys like Andy Pettit and Mariano Rivera to the mix. And, you know, they would other owners would tease Steinbrenner at the meetings, the owners' meetings, about having having spent on a big free agent, and he would start to rhyme off all the homegrown guys that he had, you know. So that's the way to go. Like Guerrero is a third baseman, is not up the middle, but he's certainly to everyone you talk to the number one stud. And if it's not the number in the Florida State League, it's Bichette. So they're in a good place.
Now, 2019 is where you have him set for, right?
That's what I would think, yeah. I would think it'd be a bit of a rush to have them here next year. Yeah.
Now, Guerrero carries an interesting birth certificate. He was born in Montreal. Does he play for Canada?
Yes, he can play for Canada in the WBC, yeah.
So when would he declare that? Or that would be before the time, right?
Well, let me think. They had it last spring, so it would be... 2021, so he could play for Canada. Yeah.
Well, certainly hope to see that, Bob. I know that you've been following the Canada under 18 team, and they've had an interesting couple of weeks. They beat Japan, and they're in a bronze medal game with Japan, if I understand. Tell us a little bit about that tournament and what you're seeing developing coming up through the Canadian baseball minor ranks.
Well, they're ranked. We as a country are ranked number 10, and they upset Japan 3 days ago, 6-4. Big victory. Noah Naylor from Mississauga played a big role in it. Scored a tying run with an expert slide at the plate. But the thing is, they're doing that well, and they're missing their leadoff hitter, Cooper Davis, who... another Mississauga boy. He's going to Vanderbilt, and the Vanderbilt professors told him he couldn't take the time off school to go to this. And the number three hitter, the shortstop Adam Hall from London, he signed. He got about $1.4 million from the Orioles. He signed. He played about three games, and he got hurt. So they don't have everybody there. So. I think they're representing the country very well.
Talking about it's not a topic we get to talk about very often on the show, and since we have you on, Bob, we'd like to take advantage of it. The state of minor baseball in Canada, and are we developing players at a more rapid? Perhaps that's not the right choice of words, but. Just your general comments on minor baseball in Canada and its growth.
Well, the registration coast to coast is up from last year and the 2 years, the success of the Blue Jays. So that's excuse me. That's they deserve a lot of credit for that. But the developing, I think a lot of credit goes to these indoor hitting facilities like there's one in Etobicoke, the Proteach, and there's the Baseball Zone in Mississauga, and the Ontario Blue Jays one, the Matrix, and another one in Mississauga, and there's all these academies in Alberta and BC. So I think there's good coaching, and I think there's a lot of. I remember being in one of those indoor facilities two or three years ago during a snowstorm, and the guy said, "You see that guy there?" And I said, "Which one?" And he said, "The guy in the red shirt." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "He walked here today in the snowstorm." You know, like that's the kind of desire passion that the kids have nowadays, and the registration is so up. In fact, that last year I was told that they had to turn kids away for Diamonds because they roll on a 2 year cycle, so they couldn't get enough Diamond space. The adults had the Diamonds over them.
Most of the players were coming from Vancouver and the Toronto area before. Now, are they coming from all over now, Bob?
I would say they're coming from BC, Alberta, the Ontario, and Quebec. Yeah, yeah. The Maritimes is a little bit behind. Yeah.
We're talking to Bob Elliott. Bob, you're the founder and editor in chief of the Canadian Baseball Network. Which is an interesting concept. Tell us a little bit about the Canadian Baseball Network, how people can find it, and what you're hoping to accomplish with it.
Well, we just write about Canadian kids and the Blue Jays, and this is a big deal. That's one of the knocking off the number one team, Japan, that's a big deal. The Dunedin won the Florida State League, the share of the Florida State League the other night. It was canceled, the final was, because of Hurricane Irma. But, there was a kid from Markham on the team, Jordan Romano, and another boy from Etobicoke, Connor Panis. So we wrote about those players as well, and we track all the players in the minor leagues. There's over 100, and all the players going to getting part of their scholarship paid for. I think there's almost 800, which is more than the number on hockey scholarships. So we just. I don't know, it just started as a hobby, and now that I retired, I kind of spend more time at it. Too much time, in fact, according to my wife. Yeah.
That's okay. Bob, Connor, he hit a couple of home runs in the final game, didn't he?
Yes,
what is his development curve now?
He's considered a prospect, yeah. He had a solo home run in the second inning, and then another one in the seventh to tie the score, and then... Then they won it in the ninth. They lost the first game of the best of three series, and then they had to go to Tampa to play game two and then game three if necessary. And they won game two. Romano pitched, and then they won game three late.
Have they ever had two prospects like that in the system, Guerrero and Bichette?
No, I don't think they have. No, I don't think they have. You'd have to go back.
Delgado and Green, maybe?
Well, maybe, but I don't think that Delgado and Green, they were, and Gonzalez was the, considered one of the, but I don't think they were considered, how would I say it?
As high?
They were, throughout baseball, they weren't recognized as high, you know, or maybe the accent wasn't placed on prospects as much back then. But I can remember going to Syracuse and writing about Gonzalez and Green and Delgado. But these guys, like, there's a story on Guerrero was 1-for-4 last night. He was 3-for-4. You know, like, maybe it's just the world we live in or what. But it's certainly changed compared to the way it used to be. You know, like, they're recognized a lot more now than they used to be.
We're talking to Bob Elliott. Bob, we won't keep you much longer, and we do want to take advantage of your expertise, and certainly you're following Canadian baseball through your Canadian Baseball Network. If you were to identify one or two young Canadian baseball players that you think may be stars or superstars in Major League Baseball at some point in time, who would you identify?
Well, there's Tristan Pompey, who was a third-team All-American at Kentucky last year. He'll be eligible for the draft in June. He's Dalton Pompey's younger brother. And then Noah Naylor, that's playing in that bronze medal game in Thunder Bay today. He's the brother of Josh Naylor, who went in the first round and got a lot of money, $2 million from the Marlins. I think he went 12th overall. So they both could go first round come June, which is it's been a long time since Canada had two first rounders.
We've been talking to Bob. Any last words, Ness?
Bob, I just want to ask you. I don't know if you followed the Leafs' plan and how they rebuilt their team.
The Leafs?
Yeah, the Leafs. How they rebuilt their team?
I think I'm a unique Canadian. I'm not a hockey fan.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll explain to you. They went out and rebuilt their team. And they went young. Can you do that? Rebuild it in baseball the same way? Can you have all young players or not?
Yeah, you could do that, but you'd have to finish last, and like Oakland did. Like Oakland had I think they had the top four or the number one draft pick or the second draft pick 4 years in a row. They were at the bottom of the tank for 4 years, I think. Yeah, you could do that.
Position players are easier, as take a shorter time to get to the big leagues. Am I correct or not?
No, I think pitchers take a shorter time.
But pitchers are harder to read in scouting, right?
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes. But I think, like, you've got these guys that'll make in the big leagues now that are throwing 98 miles an hour. There's not a lot to be taught. But as a position player, you know, you bring and talk about Guerrero, the third baseman. He just can't just go up there. He's got to do more than throw 98 miles an hour or hit a 98 mile an hour. He's got to, you know, learn how to field the ball or where to throw it and et cetera, you know, the cutoffs and all these things. You know, I think it's more difficult for a position player to make it.
Now, the reason why I was asking is because there's a lot of young guys playing in the league now. Not like before, they were a lot older. There's guys.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking that question. If they're going to be going after position players instead of pitchers, but you're telling me that pitchers can get there quicker.
I think position players can get there quicker.
Anyways, we've been talking to Bob Elliott. Bob, you've been kind with us with your time. We appreciate obviously talking your baseball expertise and your passion. And all we can say on behalf of Naz is thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Anytime, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Bob.
It. Bob
Thank
Elliott. Bob, of course, if there isn't anybody more prominent in baseball journalism in Canada, I can't think of him. So I think Bob deservedly has that title. He's been a great writer on all things baseball and passionate. And what shows through more with Bob than anything else, it's never been just a job. He's passionate about baseball. And not just about professional baseball, about
he knows his stuff.
About amateur baseball and Canadian baseball, and to all our listeners, if you are passionate about baseball and Canadian baseball, check out his site. He's an editor in chief, and he's the founder of the Canadian Baseball Network. Time for our second break. We'll be right back shortly.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that people may not know how many different kinds of ponzos Pizzaville makes. You can go Italian if you like a sausage. You can go Hawaiian if you like ham and pineapple. And you can go Canadian if you like bacon, beer, and hockey. We can build a ponzo that speaks your language, no matter where you are from. Call Pizzaville at 736-3636 or visit pizzaville.ca.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive. We'll likely save you money, too. But the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour Lance Hornby. Lance, of course, writer for Toronto Sun and Post Media Network. Good morning, Lance. How are you?
I'm very good, and sorry to make you guys wait. I'm a little tardy getting back to you on the phone today.
Well, my guess is you were out late last night celebrating the Toronto Wolfpack victory. That's probably why you were in late this morning.
You know what? I've been to many of those bars around there in the village, but I've yet to actually get inside the doors to see the Wolfpack, and I think I've missed my chance. But you know what? A wonderful concept that they came up with, and anytime Toronto can have a championship team, more power to them.
Well, they shut down King Street last night. I thought they shut it down for the Wolfpack victory, but they corrected me and they told me they shut it down for the film festival. So
yeah, it's always an interesting time trying to get anywhere in the West End. You know, I've been actually at the Toronto Maple Leaf rookie camp in the general area of the X, and it's been pretty hard to get down to Rico, although some fans are coming down to see what the Leafs of tomorrow may look like.
Tell us what the Leafs of tomorrow look like, Lance. I know you've been down at the rookie camp, and there's one particular Leaf of tomorrow that I'm interested in, and I'd like to hear you report back from. That is, of course, the Swedish kid that was drafted first overall. I have yet to learn how to pronounce his last name. It's Liljegren or something close to that.
Liljegren. Liljegren. You're pretty close.
Liljegren? Okay. Hopefully over the course of the next few years, that name will be firmly implanted and I won't have problems pronouncing it. But tell us your overall assessment of the Leaf rookies and this particular kid as well.
Well, I guess getting back to the original point, you know, tomorrow is here today, of course, and you saw that last year with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and all the young kids. So this is a tough act to follow for some of these guys who've come in behind them. You know what? It's not like the old days. A lot of these kids who are in this tournament have been hanging around since late July, really, at the club's practice facility in the West End, and they've putting some of that to use. It's a different tournament this year. There's one less team. There's only Montreal and Ottawa here, so there's not three games in three nights, which was proving to be a little bit harder on these kids coming out of the summer. So they're getting a better chance to get some practice in, and you know, skill development is as big as the games themselves. But Liljegren, you know, had a bit of a rough start the other night, the first game against Montreal, a 5-2 loss. He is still adjusting to smaller ice. He had a little bit of that at the World Junior Showcase in Plymouth, Michigan. That was really his first, or latest exposure to that. So he has a little bit to go, but, you know, you saw flashes of it. There was a third period power play where he was doing some pretty good work, reminded you a bit of Thomas Caberle organizing that Leaf power play from the back end. I think he can bring a lot. The other Swede to watch is Carl Grundstrom, who's played a little bit with the Marlies in the playoffs last year. His situation is he must return to Sweden if he doesn't make the Leafs, but he's a hard-nosed winger. I think he's a bit of a dark horse.
Lance, how many spots are open on this team? It doesn't look like too many.
No, not for sure. I mean, if you, let's just take Liljegren, for example. Maybe 6, 7, 8 on defense. If the Leafs carry that many, might be the only one. And that, again, depends if Martin Marincin, who's obviously, someone that Mike Babcock has a soft spot for, if he comes back, then really you're just fighting over scraps for 7 and 8. And really goes back to the old argument. You don't want a young player taking that spot because he's not going to play a lot. And if it's, say, a Travis Dermott or an Andrew Nielsen, who are two very young Toronto Marlies who had a wonderful rookie season in the AHL last year, and they're being talked up as possibly challenging for that job, as well as two Swedish free agents. They brought in Calle Rosén and Andreas Borgman. It's a logjam for a position that really should go to a veteran. Maybe a Marincin might be the ideal guy to be the seventh or eighth guy, and maybe plug one of these kids in a top six. So unless they really impress when Leaf camp opens next week and you see them in exhibition games, I don't think you'll see any movement there. And otherwise, to your point, really the top three lines are locked up, and it really depends on what the Leafs do with the fourth line. Do they want a sniper in Kasperi Kapanen coming back there? Nikita Soshnikov, who got hurt towards the end of the year and sort of fell off the radar, is he going to come back? Or might one of the Marley forwards who's here, or a guy like Mito Altonen, who's a Finnish player, also a free agent in the camp? So there's two or three spots that may be open at forward, but they're all going to be fourth line or really just spare forward, utility forward type guys.
We're talking to Lance Hornby. Lance, people are starting to get excited. It's September. Evenings are getting a little bit cooler. The minor hockey, GTHL's ramping up. Kids are back in the rinks. And Naz is counting down the days to the day of the season. He announces it on Facebook every morning, how many days to the first game of the season. Hockey is becoming the discussion again. And my two big questions at this point in time, and I'll throw it to you, Lance. Where does Patrick Marleau fit in on this team? And who are going to be Austin Matthews' line mates?
Well, that may be one question in the same.
Yeah.
I guess on paper, Mike Babcock, I guess, will get into this a little bit next week. He's, but the only thing he's hinted at is that maybe he'd like Ron Hainsey to be Morgan Riley's partner on defense. Forward line is very interesting. All the big players whom I've talked to at the summer skates in the last couple of weeks, they claim to be in the dark. They're not sure who is going to play with whom. But I think you can't not look past Austin Matthews as Patrick Marleau's winger. I mean, you have a proven scorer for all that Zach Hyman does. For Matthews, last year, a fellow rookie, great chemistry with him on and off the ice. He dug a lot of pucks out and allowed Matthews to have the success he did. I don't think you pay all that money to Patrick Marleau and drop him in the batting order. I think you would put those two together with William Nylander, and that would be a pretty effective line, only because Mitch Marner had so much success with James Van Riemsdyk and Tyler Bozak on the so-called second line. And then, of course, you have Nazem Kadri centering Connor Brown and maybe Zach Hyman. And that would be a fun line to watch. I think it'd really get under some skin of the opposition.
The goaltending seems to be solid with Anderson. What happens if an injury occurs? Are we confident enough for our backup goalie? And is the problem all of the NHL is like that? Their number one goalie gets hurt, they're in trouble.
Yeah, well, you know what? So much science goes in now to picking up a good backup goalie who, number one, is going to have a good chemistry with the number one and not resent the playing time. It's always a perfect situation rarely presents itself where either injury doesn't interfere or you have a so-called number two who wants to be a number one and is creating some kind of controversy in that respect. I think the Leafs are well served as long as you point out, Frederik Andersen stays healthy. I mean, he made such a difference last year, and you look at how other goalies came in and made bad Leaf teams playoff teams. I'm talking about Curtis Joseph, Felix Potvin, Eddie Belfour. That kind of impact that Andersen has had. Curtis McIlhenny was brought back. He seems to be the perfect tonic for that. He knows his role. He knows that he's going to play a lot of those difficult back-to-back situations when the team is maybe a little tired. But also, your point is well taken. You know, should anything happen to Andersen, I don't think the Leafs have very much ready now. I mean, they have two promising backups at the Marlies and Garrett Sparks and Kazimir Kaskasuo, but I'd be interested to see them, run with McIlhenny as their number one if they had to, and I'm sure they hope that situation does not arise.
We're talking to Lance Hornby. Lance Hornby, of course, with the Toronto Sun and Post Media. Lance, I know you've been working on a couple of projects, and the publishing date is getting closer and closer, from what I understand. It is your new book coming out, Toronto and the Maple Leafs. I've read a review on it. It's a 5-star review. And you answer the question: why does
my family to stop sending in those under anonymous names?
But. Why you answer the question? Why does this city hold this team in such reverence? Well, tell us about your the publishing date and what we can expect in the book.
Okay, well, it's the book, as you say, is called Toronto and the Maple Leafs by ECW Publishing here in Toronto, a fine Canadian company, and of course they. Have a foreword by Ron Ellis, and I guess Ron gets into it a little bit in the foreword. A guy who's grew up in a Leaf family, so to speak. His dad, a big fan, who played for the Marlies, and Ron played for the Marlies, and subsequently the Maple Leafs, played 1,000 games. It's just the culture that got in the city going way back to the Irish immigrants and the founding of the team under the Toronto St. Patrick's banner after the Toronto Arenas, of course, in 1917. But a huge immigrant population. It sort of began with the Irish, but now you see so many different faces around the city with Leaf sweaters on, and that I have Mayor John Tory speaking to that. And it's essentially how, in World War II, a lot of people were together, and there was no television, just radio, and there were no any other, outside of maybe the Toronto Argonauts, any other strong Toronto sports franchise. And the Maple Leafs brought a lot of people together, both home and away during the war years. And of course, winning breeds a lot of legacy, and Toronto won all those cups in the 1940s, not so many in the 50s, of course, but then you had the development of Hockey Night in Canada and then their great success in the 1960s. And I think that's what lingers today. The Leafs have not won a cup, of course, in going on 51 years, but they remain because of the strong influence of all those people who were listening to Foster Hewitt and that, and grew up around a hockey team that had a great record, lived right, as Mike Babcock might say, and that legacy continues today.
Lance, we were talking about sports radio in the previous segment, the first segment of the show, and I brought up where I listened to sports, and it was Dick Beddoes, who was involved with the Leafs as a broadcaster. He had a show called Hockey Hotline. What are your recollections of Dick Beddoes?
You know what?
Lance, you only have 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, you know what? I listened and watched when he was on. Of course, he had those flamboyant suits. I'm sure everyone
and the hat.
And the hat, and not just a great broadcaster, but a wonderful writer as well in the Globe and Mail. And I was transfixed by him, and I feel very lucky that one of my first couple of years in the Leafs, he was still there, and he was great. He remembered my name, and that it was such a thrill to hear from him. But in the book, actually, I talk about the whole sports radio phenomenon in Toronto, and I talked to a couple of people in your business, how they can talk people off the roof when the Leafs are doing poorly, and how they try to keep it on the rails when it looks like the Leafs are going to make the playoffs. So as I say, a multifaceted, very interesting relationship the city has with its team.
Lance, we've got a minute left with you. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you in your email to me, you said you had another project going on with Mike Wilson.
Yes, Mike Wilson, the ultimate Leafs fan.
A good friend of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Go ahead.
Yes, yeah, okay. Very much had a great time doing a book with Mike on his fantastic Leaf collection. It's actually part of it now in Ottawa at the National Museum of History, but Mike has over 2,000 items all relating to the Maple Leafs in a private museum that he's sort of now getting to share with the public through the National Museum. And if you're a Leaf fan who likes anything from an old contract from Punch Imlach where people were getting paid nickels and dimes to old seats from Maple Leaf Gardens, sweaters from the 1920s, Mike has it, and everything in his collection must have a story, and he has some amazing tales.
Anyways, I want to go back on that book, and we'll talk about it another time. It's a fantastic book. I got a couple of copies of it, and in the book, it's got a Dave Keon sweater at one point, and I actually got it personally autographed by Dave. If you're a Leaf fan, it's a great book. We've been talking to Lance Hornby. Toronto and the Maple Leafs, a book coming out. When's it coming out, Mike?
First week in October.
Oh, sorry, Lance, sorry. First week in October, and the other book is, of course, out. You can find it at Indigo or online. Lance, you know how much we appreciate this. All I can say is it's going to be a great season. Go Leafs, go. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Lance. That, of course, was Lance Hornby. Really quick last word, Ness.
I remember Dick Bettles signing off, and he would say, thank you and good night.
Anyways, I can't beat that, so I'll just say to our listeners, have a fantastic week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.